The scripture reading for tonight is Psalm 130. Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my supplications. If you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, Lord, who could stand? But there is forgiveness with you, so that you may be revered. I wait for the Lord, my soul waits, and in his word I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than those who watch for the morning, more than those who watch for the morning. O Israel, hope in the Lord, for with the Lord there is steadfast love, and with him is great power to redeem. It is he who will redeem Israel from all its iniquities. The word of the Lord.
The Marquess of Queensberry was a real ass, a real macho cuss. I mean, if you don't mind me saying, and to be clear, I'm talking about the ninth Marquess of Queensberry. I don't want to unnecessarily malign 1 through 8, 10 and following. I can't speak to their character. I'm not even sure what Marquess of Queensberry were up to by now. Well, I didn't know, but of course, then I looked it up. We're on number 12, David Douglas. He's 89 years old and a noted pottery designer. It seems he takes after his maternal ancestors. His maternal grandparents were interior designers from a long line of artists, not a macho cuss among them. But number 9, a bloated bully. He was the worst kind of aristocrat, wanting to be both proper and a tough guy. In 1865, he drafted the rules by which the sport of boxing is governed. The Marquess of Queensberry rules, he called them. Of course that's what he called them, because that's the kind of person number 9 was. He has to put his name on everything. He actually didn't even write them, he just took credit for them. Perhaps people have been brawling forever for money, honor, and to settle any and every sort of disagreement from, well, probably since people sought money, honor, and had disagreements to settle. Maybe I shouldn't say people. Should I say men? Men have been brawling since men have had disagreements? I mean, I know there are women, boxers, and MMA fighters. You know, what's her name? Ronda Rousey. She packs a punch. And of course there are women who throughout history have had physical fights for money, honor, and disagreement settling. But it does seem, properly seem to be more of a go-to for males. You know, let's settle this like men. Which means violence, right? Properly. I said properly. Number 9 would like that, properly. He wanted to take the brutal contest and make it into a proper sport so proper gentlemen could be involved. It was not fair, he thought, leaving the violent good fun to the lower classes. There are 12 rules. They prescribe a 24-foot ring, 3-minute rounds. You have to wear gloves. No one else can come in the ring and help out. No shoes or boots with spikes on them. And absolutely no wrestling or hugging allowed. As it could appear, he said, homoerotic. Not only was the ninth Marquess of Queensberry an ass, a bloated bully, and a macho cuss, he was very homophobic, unrelentingly homophobic. And this played out, most infamously, when he came to suspect that his oldest son and future Marquess of Queensberry, number 10, was engaged in a homosexual relationship with the Liberal Prime Minister, the 5th Earl of Rosebery.
And then he went on, he died of a gunshot wound under mysterious circumstances. So his second son, Lord Percy Douglas, became the heir and would eventually become MQ-10. His third son was Lord Alfred Boysey Douglas. Lord Alfred Boysey Douglas, the third son, was a close friend and known to be a lover of the most famous poet and playwright of the time, Oscar Wilde. This infuriated number nine, and his son, Lord Alfred, refused to end the relationship with Wilde. In an attempt to out Oscar Wilde and expose him to arrest and imprisonment, because so-called homosexual acts would not be decriminalized in Britain until 1967, the Marquis left a calling card at Wilde's club reading, "For Oscar Wilde, posing as a sodomite." Wilde sued him for libel, and Queensberry was arrested. Then Queensberry's lawyers tried to portray Wilde as a vicious older man who seduced innocent young boys into a life of degenerate homosexuality. Wilde dropped the libel case when Queensberry's lawyers informed the court that they intended to call several male prostitutes as witnesses to testify that they had had sex with Wilde. Wilde was then charged and convicted of gross indecency and sentenced to 2 years of hard labor. Now, this is hard labor in the prisons in the 1860s. And the conditions were so horrendous in the prison that Wilde became so weak from hunger and disease that it was feared that he was dying. In an attempt to lift his spirits, the warden allowed him to write a letter to Lord Alfred, whom he had not heard from at all, and whom he still loved deeply. He was given just one sheet of paper per day, and when he filled it, the warden took it away. He continued to write this letter this way day after day, until when finished, it was 50,000 words long. And in the process of writing the letter, Oscar Wilde's spirits and health were recovered. They were restored. The slow pace at which Wilde was required to write this letter led to deep contemplation. It became a kind of spiritual practice, self-reflection, where he sought help and understanding of his deep despair in Jesus' posture of surrender and release, mercy and redemption. The first part of the letter chronicles his rise to fame and his lifestyle and his riches and renown. And then he chronicles his fall into the deep despair and the way in which the acceptance of that fall led to a kind of profound understanding of himself and the mercy of God he felt he couldn't have known any other way. When he was released, the warden gave him the 50,000-word letter, unsent. It was later published under the title De Profundis. De Profundis is the Latin title for Psalm 130, taken from the opening phrase of the Latin translation, De Profundis Clamavi Ad Te Domini. From the depths I cry out to you, O Lord. De Profundis. From the depths. By the time Wilde's letter was published under that title, it was a well-known prayer for times of the deepest despair. It's a penitential psalm that asks first of God to be heard. It asks God just to be seen, that God would recognize the psalmist down deep, down below the waterline in the darkness. And then the confession of the psalmist's inability to return to the surface and stand on their own strength. And then it speaks of the psalmist being overcome by God's mercy. And in that overwhelmed state of God's mercy, the psalmist finds the possibility of hope. This psalm, De Profundis, in Judaism is prayed on the high holy days, but also in times of communal distress. It's prayed, read together. also was a favorite of St. Benedict's in the times when the northern hordes were invading and all seemed lost. He would gather his monks together and pray the De Profundis. From the depths we cry out. De Profundis has always been a psalm that has had a deep communal political meaning. When a community is overwhelmed by a force that seems unstoppable or unassailable, when the waters seem to be churning and dragging us down, when the despair seems unfathomable, it is from those depths that we cry out. It is that posture of surrender, of such naked need, that there is a deeper understanding of the mercy of God, the revelation of that mercy. And it places in us some possibility of hope that helps us to stand. It's a possibility to understand God in a way that it does not seem quite possible from a posture of strength, with your dukes up, but only when the individual is broken, when the community is broken, when there's helplessness all around, and when they cry out together, we cry out together as a community in despair. It's at that point that we get a deeper understanding of the mercy of God, and the revelation of that mercy leads to the possibility of hope. And that hope helps us to swim to the surface, and then, fully buoyed by that hope, to dive back down to bring up others.